Hello, this is Daryl Bigger. We come today to the last study in our quarter's worth of Bible study guides on Jesus Wept, the Bible and Human Emotions. This last lesson is a sort of summary, if you will, as to how we can partner ourselves with Jesus to be in better mental and emotional health. With me again are Larry Viverka, School of Theology at Walla Walla and hospital chaplain, and Julian Melgosa, psychologist and dean of our School of Education and Psychology here at Walla Walla. Partnership with Jesus. Julian, I'm struck with the list of things you outline in the study guide for this week, the components to spiritual development and mental health. And that list is this: prayer and Bible study, worship, the practice of forgiveness, service to others, hope, and trust in God. That sounds like a very religiously, spiritually oriented list. But you say you see evidence that non-religious people are getting interested in these topics as well.
Absolutely. I have been seeing it in the last 15 years or so in the psychological community. The purpose of this last lesson of the quarterly was to include a number of elements that would contribute to mental health, mental and emotional health, that would be Bible-based and also presented as positive correlates in the literature. And all the ones that you have mentioned, all of them they find in the professional literature today, even the literature that doesn't have to do anything with religious aspects. Studies that demonstrate that in more or less extent, depending on where they are conducted or who conducts these studies, they have to do with increased mental as well as physical health. And that was the reason of bringing them here as a conclusion, because before these studies were done, obviously centuries before, they were Bible content, and they were of high priority for Christian living, for the happiness of people, for the well-being of communities. And they are being visited again. And I was also mentioning that in my days of student in the 70s and graduate students, a student in the 80s, as I went to various professional meetings in the area of psychology, you would never, ever find any presentation that had to do with spirituality, religion, anything of this nature would be considered by psychology as something non-scientific and not worth talking in a group of scientists. And that changed in the next decade, in the 90s, and in the first decade of our century. A great deal of studies that had to do with the benefits of prayer, with the benefits of forgiveness for the one who grants the forgiveness, and so on, and encouragement that some of the mental health practitioners are given to people to continue to use their prayer and their Bible reading, even though they may not be believers themselves. These days, counselors are trained to recommend, whenever they have a client that is a person of faith, to insist that they continue to hold on those beliefs, as opposed to what used to be said: your church and your religion are the ones that are making you feel guilty, mm-hmm. and they are bringing you trouble. You better consider leaving your religion.
Yeah. Huh. And Larry, you've had some exposure to that increased professional focus on spiritual things too.
Well, it's been interesting to see the explosion of studies that have looked at the practices of faith, a religious faith and experience, and the different sorts of things that these university medical schools have been looking at as it's affecting the amount of bleeding during surgery, the recovery time, healing time after surgery, the effects on blood pressure, the whole gamut of medical complications and so on. and the effects of what it means for a person to have personal devotions, to have a prayer life, to attend religious meetings. And they're just simply going through the behaviors of religious faith and then looking at all sorts of different aspects of physiology and how it affects these things.
I hear some Christians worry that in some ways this approach to the study of our Christian disciplines, if you wish to call them that, that our approach to those studies makes it sound very similar to the kinds of religious experiences those from other religions have. Buddhists, for example, have meditation periods, and the Hindus do praying. That seems to affect them some as well. And I hear some Christians worry about those comparisons. Does that alarm either of you, and how do you handle those concerns?
It doesn't alarm me. I believe that spirituality, as everyone practices it, it can be beneficial. I am not going to choose. It's not my choice to relate to God the way a Buddhist does. However, I have to admit that a Buddhist practicing his or her prayers can benefit from the influence of God. So it's just something that it boils down to your personal choice. And I don't think I have the authority to tell a member of a different religion that their prayer is not good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you know, I like the way I pray, and I want to exert my faith every day more and more. But I don't have any right. I would be alarmed more by the people who are attacking God and his existence, and God is a source of healing. That would worry me. Mm-hmm. But different manifestations of religious experiences, I think God accepts them.
Mm. I'm essentially on the same page as Julian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does the benefit of prayer differ for us than it does for other people? Or are you saying that it's essentially the same kind of experience for us as for someone in another kind of faith group?
Well, if you're talking about the effects on one's mental, emotion, physical health, my sense is that those benefits are very, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what may differ is meaning, the object of one's devotion. Those might be different areas of difference.
Mm-hmm. I was struck as I was going through this particular lesson. I was struck with remembering Jesus after very stressful times, going away to pray. And I wonder why it is in this society we don't hear more people talk about that as their way of recovering from a busy day at work or a hectic life at home. Why we don't hear about people praying instead of collapsing in front of the TV set or going to the bar on the way home or et cetera.
I think we fall short. I think that Jesus' way is the best way. We don't do it. We just you know, need to try out the ways that are more Christ-like.
It calls me as an invitation to, by the title of the lesson this week, to a partnership with Christ, to make that a primary way of dealing with the pressures of life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've wondered whether Jesus was an introvert or an extrovert.
Huh.
You know, the introvertive way of regaining strength and replenishing energy is to turn to things that would be considered more private or solace, like getting away and having personal quiet time with God. Whereas for an extrovert, joining a Bible study group or a prayer circle or a praise session would be far more energizing and give buoyancy and recover the kind of energy reserves needed. I've just wondered about that.
I have more than wondered, Larry. I've experimented over a number of years with students in spirituality classes, given them a personality inventory to assess their level of integration with other people or distance from other people, and then had them reflect on that in the context of their spiritual life. And I have discovered that that many students who feel guilty about not living the kind of religious life, following the religious practices they think they should, would really be contrary to their natural personality instincts.
Mm-hmm.
And when they give themselves permission to be themselves, so that those who are more extroverted immerse themselves in small groups or communities, mm-hmm. and those who are more introverted give themselves permission to be by themselves spiritually with God, that it refreshes their spiritual life in an amazingly positive way.
Mm. Yeah.
I think all of us need to nudge ourselves both directions so that one doesn't overtake the other. That is to say, private life doesn't become all there is, or church life doesn't become all there is.
Yeah. Balance, I think, is the key word.
Yeah. Forgiveness is another focus of a lot of study recently, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The benefits of forgiving for the one offering forgiveness, not for the one who is being forgiven.
Well, actually, for both, but more for the ones who grants forgiveness. Yes.
Yeah, the recent studies have focused on that benefit for the giver, not just the recipient. Yeah. Any other things about this partnering with God you want to add in the last few seconds before we close today?
One thing that was that struck me is in looking at Julian's outline. The little book, Steps to Christ, the first half of the book goes through a procedure or a series of steps in developing our mature relationship with Jesus. And then the last half of the book is essentially going down through this list of titles in how to maintain that relationship or to give consistency, viability, strength to one's Christian life, how to stay alive spiritually, essentially. And this goes well, I think, with the purpose and direction of that particular little book.
Well, Larry, thank you for making that connection and for being a partner in these discussions this quarter. And Julian, to you, our grateful thanks for introducing us to a unique study in our community on the connection between mental health and biblical examples and principles. Thank you.
It's been my pleasure, and I thank you for inviting me.
And thanks to Chad Ofterhaar, our engineer, Daryl Bigger from Walla Walla for the Good Word.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.